Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with a Kia EV6. Inspire your senses. The fully electric EV6. Kia. Movement that inspires.
1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Yesterday at the start of the programme, you would have heard Deb Cahill talking about the death of her sister Nicole and the way it had been hijacked, was one word used, by the anti-vaxxers led by Gemma Doherty as an example of what the vaccination could do, and making horrific allegations about the family. And Deb made it quite clear that the family believe a vaccination had nothing whatsoever to do with their sister, their daughters, their granddaughters passing. We now have another communication from another family who are being used by Gemma Doherty and the anti-vaxxers for their own agenda. This is from Pat Halley, and Pat is the father of Katie Halley, who died. And he says, I was absolutely appalled to see that Gemma Doherty was using the death of my daughter, Katie, to promote her own agenda on her website. The reference on her website to cover up is so removed from the reality. All Katie's family have been vaccinated and see no connection to the COVID vaccine in her tragic passing. Thanks for your sensitivity and discretion. We were also contacted overnight by another woman, Annetta Safiak. Annetta, good afternoon.
Well, I met with Gemma Doherty briefly in Longford 2 years ago, over 2 years ago, in May 2019.
Okay.
After Gemma used a photograph of my son and his school friends on her platform, and made a point that the Irish are becoming minority in their own country.
Okay.
So this was about a week after she came to Longford, and I got a text from my friend to say she was in town.
Okay.
He sent me a link to her YouTube channel, and I could clearly see she was walking the streets of Longford. So even though I was heavily pregnant, 9 months pregnant, and it was quite late, 8 p.m., I was already in my bed, I decided to get up and have a chat with her and explain to her that that it's not okay. But there was very little conversation.
Just to be clear, Annetta, the photograph that Gemma Doherty published, and I think she had 27,000 followers at that stage.
Sure.
That's more than the sales of some daily newspapers. But the photographs you published, were the children identifiable, or were their eyes covered or blocked?
No, they were all out there. I could clearly see my son and his friends. Nothing was covered, nothing was blurred.
Okay. And her point was that this photograph demonstrates how
the Irish are becoming minority in their own country.
Okay. So she's now in Longford, and she's walking around as she does with her live feed on. Yeah. So you got up out of your bed. You're heavily pregnant and headed down. What happened? Did she agree to listen to your point of view?
Oh, not at all. No. Once I opened my mouth and she could hear that it was about the photograph, she basically turned around. And then the further I got emotional, so I started.
Of course,
I followed her and I wanted to talk, but she started running away. And I was frustrated. I was angry, I suppose, and I used the words that I shouldn't have, and but it was live streamed on her YouTube channel. So by the time I got home, it took me about 4 minutes. Longford is a small town, so it took me about 4 minutes to get back home. By that time, I was already declared a national hero by half of the country and a national disaster by others. Mm-hmm. And my life became public.
And how did that impact on you, Annetta?
Well, there was a lot of abuse. The abuse on the line started very early. Basically, it started when I got home. And it continued. Mm-hmm. However, at some point, it started being an abuse open too. There was criminal damage. That's what the Gardaí call it. Criminal damage done to my back door window. Mm-hmm. My baby's grave was devastated.
Oh, my God.
There were stones thrown at me when I was walking. So it got pretty heavy and pretty serious.
And you've other children, are they in school or creche or what?
I do. Up until now, I had one at school, that school that Gemma doesn't like, and two of my girls were in the creche, in the same creche. Mm. And, you know, it's very hard. It's not a normal moment when a manager of the creche calls you and tells you that the guards were just in, mm. and that they told her that if there's any suspicious activity, she should call them immediately and they will come over. Mm-hmm. It's pretty tough for a parent, any parent, and any person.
And I know you didn't court publicity afterwards because you gave one short interview to a local paper and you gave one short interview to Channel 4, who were making a documentary, in fairness to them, about the activities of these people.
Yeah.
So you haven't courted publicity. This is your third ever interview. Are you not worried, Annetta, that she'll come after you again, so to speak, in terms of platforming?
I don't know, Joe. I don't. I went off social media in March 2020. I'm talking about Twitter. Twitter was my public account. I deleted it. I haven't been back on Twitter since. Mm-hmm. And what I've noticed, actually, is the most horrendous abuse that I've experienced happened after I left the so-called public platform.
Yeah.
So whether I speak or not, it has very little impact.
Okay.
There are people on the far right that don't like me because this, that, and the other. There are people on the far left that think I'm not good enough either. So whatever I do, I do it wrong.
Okay. Now it's not being alleged or even implicated that the person we're talking about had anything to do with the subsequent acts. The only interaction you had with Gemma O'Doherty was that evening in the square. But why did she say why she was running away? Like she goes on about debating and she wants a national debate on this, that, and the other. And ironically, when you see the other videos where she confronts Gardaí and identifies the Gardaí by their number, she keeps arguing with the Gardaí, even though, to their great, great credit, without exception, the Gardaí have enormous diplomacy and patience. But she follows them and accuses them of this, that, and the other. So, but in your case, when you went to her and said, why did you use the photograph of, what age are the children?
At that time, my son was nine.
Okay. Why did you use a photograph of 32 or whatever identifiable nine-year-olds saying that this is an example of how the Irish are not, the Irish are not the majority in their own country? And there's implications in that. She wasn't prepared to say why she used the photograph and why the photograph was subsequently picked up by extremist groups as far away as America. After she didn't want to explain why she did it.
No, she didn't. And her explanations afterwards were, well, going from, well, A to Z, from starting with that I didn't speak English, so she couldn't understand me. Mm. Didn't have a word of English apart from the very bad word that I used, so she didn't really know what it was all about. I was sent by whoever. Gemma Doherty is very used to her monologues. I don't think she can hold to a conversation, you know, unless it's a one-stream conversation when she's shouting at somebody, then yes, but not the type that we're having now.
Now, I'll ask this in relation. I often wonder, do the Gardaí, and her identifiable, because she does the same. She posts YouTubes of identifiable Gardaí, their numbers mm-hmm. and everything. I just wonder, those Gardaí, I hope they get counselling afterwards or some conversation afterwards about how to dismiss this nonsense. But I'm very conscious that you were pregnant. I hope the baby was born, hopefully mm-hmm. healthy. Yes, yes.
The baby was. Thank goodness, she right. was fine. She's two
right,
now.
Right.
However, yes, when you mentioned the mental health, yes, it did have an impact on me too, obviously, because it was not only me, but my family was on the spotlight. It's a very small town I live in, and
were the social media companies any use, Annetta?
Not really, no.
Okay.
Not at all, I'd say. No, I reported those abusive comments, like hundreds did, actually, on my behalf as well, which I'm very thankful for. But I didn't actually see any of them being taken down.
Mm. Now, I know Gemma Doherty is no longer on YouTube and Twitter, but the reason people are contacting us the last few days is that they're hosting their own sites at this stage to get round all these bans. So I don't know how the bans work. Annetta, thanks very much for contacting us. It's a horrific episode you went through. Annetta Safiak, thank you so much and kind regards to you and your family.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Mohammed, good afternoon. Mohammed contacted us. Among other things, you say, I'm in despair. I haven't slept. Your family are still in Afghanistan. Have you been talking to any of your sisters, Mohammed?
Yes, sir. How are you, sir? I'm
good.
My name is Mohammed.
Okay.
Yes, from last 7, today is the 8 days, really, I couldn't sleep.
Yeah.
Every day I'm just talking with my family, especially with my sisters.
Okay.
She's a medical doctor. When she's not answering the phone to me, you know, it's 100 things or a million things came to my mind if something happens to my family, even especially to my sister, you know. I'm just totally worried. It's not about only my family. It's the rest of the young girls, especially. And every day we have different news, different things. The bad thing is the media, especially the news, are not working properly because the controlling the Taliban control everything.
Yeah.
Just only few small TV are allowed to speak, but when you go outside the city, it's no one allowed to talk with the people. You know, they're killing people. They just, especially the I don't know, did you saw the news? Even they put the young student on the water, you know, it's a dirty water on the middle of the city center in Kabul, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The life is get every day worse and worse. I don't know. We hope last 20 years, we say, everything is get back to normal as life, especially for the young generation have a good education, school, mm-hmm. university, hospital, back. After 20 years, everything is collapsed, you know. It's now, we're back to the zero point, you know.
And what are, when you do get through to your sisters, what how have things changed for them so far, Mohammed?
It's get every day getting worse and worse. She is a medical doctor. She's finishing to get her. She will be a full professional doctor in next 4 weeks. Sorry, 4 months.
Brilliant. Okay.
And I have another sister. She's in a law student in Kabul University. It's just only 3 months left for the final exam to finish from university. You know, school is all closed. You know, it's just only I just heard the announcement from next 10 days that the boys' school from first class to sixth class will be open. But I don't know. The situation is get worse and worse. We don't have any access with anything. You know, the banks is not open. People have money in the bank, but there's no access to take them out. Like, the life is get worse and worse every day, you know. It's the bad things is the girls, I'm not sure that the girls, especially, you know, the young generation, but the special things, the girls will be not allowed to go back to school and back to work. It's the main reason, you know.
It's unthinkable.
In one thing, sir, I just have a contact yesterday from two different cities, you know.
Okay.
In Carl Baghlan, it's one of the people was stand against the Taliban because they just came inside the city. They killed innocent people, young boys and girls, especially, and they took the young woman with them because the husband was fighting against them, and they killed on the front of his young children. You know, that's the worst things in Kandahar, in Helmand, in Jalalabad. It's every day is getting worse. You know.
And Mohammed, do you remember when the Taliban were in power 20 years ago?
Yes, I remember. I was in Kabul. I left during the Taliban regime from Kabul. I remember what happens, you know.
And how was your family affected when they were in power previously? They're back in now.
I lost two brothers on that time. And I lost my father as well, you know. I don't know what happens to my father because it's still... We didn't find his body. We didn't find, you know. It was totally. Still, we are searching. We wish. We think. Hope. Hopefully, you know that all the prisoner are out. Hopefully, my father as well will be alive. Will back. But still, we don't have any idea. It's maybe.
And was your father? Was your father Mohammed? Was he involved in politics?
He was a member of one of the parties. Yes, it's called Hizb Islami. Our leader was. It's not our leader, but yeah, he's a leader of the Hizb Islami. He was belonged to one of, was a not politician on the government, but he belonged to the one of the party. You know, we have in Ireland different parties: Fine Gael, Fine Gael, Green Party. But my father as well was. Member of one of those party in Afghanistan.
And are you saying clearly you do not know whether your father is dead or alive?
No. Just the only things we heard from his friend.
Yeah.
Because four of his friend was with him. Mm-hmm. Two was dead. One of them with my father is still. We don't know what happened. But the friend say, "Oh, it's." They are killed by the Taliban, you know, I don't know. But still, we didn't find any his body or any information about him. I just contact many NGOs in Afghanistan. I contact United Nations, Red Cross, but still we didn't get any information.
Okay. And I know you're in Ireland since 2000.
Yes, I'm living last 17 years in Ireland.
Yeah. And Mohammed, do your sisters want to leave?
She always, you know, when I'm just talking to her, you know, always she asking me, you know, even my mother was 2008, I was to bring them to Ireland. My mother said, oh, no, it's, I don't need to leave my kids to go out. Hopefully the country will be going on the right path. The life will be get better. The good things is the girls are can go to school, can go to work. But right now, from last 8 days, when I'm contact to my mother and my sisters, always say, my mother say, okay, don't worry about me, but please do something to take out these two girls out from the country, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's the we don't need to, because she, these two girls are too young, you know. And we have a lot of things to be in the future, you know. It's,
Anna, do you think, and you mentioned your four sisters, but that the sisters who are not married are in greater danger?
No. So I have four sisters, one of them married, three of them not married.
Okay. And do you think the unmarried ones are in greater danger from the Taliban?
Yes.
Why?
Because, you know, it's, I heard, in some places the Taliban searching the houses. They say if the girls are not married, they need to marry with the Taliban member, you know. That's the main concern about that for me. To you know, I will be not happy to this happens to my family, especially my sister. If it happens, they will kill herself, you know. I don't need to be happens, you know. That's the main reason, you know. Like, every day, and I heard this happens in Baghlan, in Helmand, in Jozjan, in Mazar-e-Sharif. This is the reality. But because of no media, no news are allowed to go inside the city, talk with the people, it's no one can hear the voice, you know.
And Mohammed, I know you're an Irish citizen. Have your sisters any Irish connections in that sense? Could the Irish government help them leave?
No, I actually don't have any contact with the Irish government. But the only things I was trying for last few days to meet with the I just contact a few TDs and also the Department of Justice, but I just receive one correspondent from one of the Finifol TDs. That's it. And he told me, he sent me email. He said, okay, I'll contact with my top colleagues in Department of Justice in immigration, but I don't know what can we do in the next step. You know, I'm still waiting, but I just knocked a lot of door, contact a lot of people, but I didn't get any response, you know.
And what is, insofar as it makes any difference, unfortunately, at this stage, what is your understanding of how the Taliban regained power so quickly? I know it was at the barrel of a gun.
Okay.
And not just their cruelty, but the fear of them, because they have...
As a point, I have, from my point, okay, it's our current president, you know, the President Ghani.
Mm-hmm.
And also, you know, the guy, he's represented from America. His name is Khalilzad, okay?
Okay.
This two, you know, it's, I don't know what happens. I spoke with a few army leaders. You know, it's not the leaders, the army person. He told us, because from the top level, from the government, especially the country was controlling by three people, Ghani, Mohib, and one of the president palace person. It's I forgot his name. These three people decide to left the country in a empty face. You know, they just contact to the army leaders. Don't fight. Then they're thinking, okay, when the Taliban came to the...
Why do you think the Afghan army, who were incredible, much much better equipped than their own army... Why did they not fight for their own country against the Taliban?
Yes. Okay, this is the main point, it's main question. Thank God you're asking me, okay? The army was... We have a greatest army, they created, built it last 20 years, okay?
Okay.
You're a very good fighter, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The army was, we don't have any issue from the army side, but the government, especially Ghani, he was a very corrupt person. He was a racist person. He just destroyed the country. He put the wrong person on the top of the military. That's mm-hmm. why the military was collapsed, because the leader are sold him to the Taliban. This is the main thing. Okay, the army was very nice. Army, strong army, was a love the country. Even right now, I don't know if you saw the news. Some of the leader, you know, the army officer was now is have an interview from different countries. They mm-hmm. say it's the Ghani, Mohib, these two guys was tell us to not fight, you know. And the Mr. Ghani, he put the wrong person on the top of the army. Yeah. Like that's in the leader of the army, he sold the army, you know, to the Taliban.
And where are that's all the weapons and the vehicles and the armored?
The weapons is all is now in the hand of the Taliban.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like we were told, the army was nearly 400,000 and the Taliban were 75,000.
Yes, I'm just, you know, that's yeah. why. That's why we have a concern about that, because the wrong, you know, the very strong equipment of the army are now in the hand of the wrong people, you know.
Hmm.
It is a big shock for, it is not only for Afghanistan, it's a shock for all the around the world, you know. It's a shock for it's supposed to be, it's like, I have a question, like, in my mind, I have to ask from someone, like, especially from the American president. Okay, you went to Afghanistan last 20 years. For what reason? Okay, if you are fighting. Now you give the all strong equipment to the wrong person. How you think? You think the Taliban has changed? No, that's not possible. That will be not possible. No one trusted. We will see in next few days, next few months.
Mm-hmm.
If it's recognized by the world country, you will see it's a big headache for the rest of the world, you know. That's not the way are talking the politician, especially in America and in London. They are just lying to the people. And we will see in next few weeks, few months, then what happens, you know?
But you are
I
very.
Hope will be not happen.
But you're very worried about the next few months.
Of course, yes. I'm always every day, you know. Thanks God, you know. Thanks God. I always when I'm praying, I'll say thanks God. I just grow up. I'm just 42, like 43 years old. Okay.
Yeah.
I just born in fighting, grow up in fighting, and I decide my kids will be not happy. Be in the position I have. I have the experience I have. You know, I decide to out from the country to at least my kids are not have the same experience.
Yeah.
That's the main concern for me. You know, I wish the Taliban is changed. You know, if it's changed, it's good. If it's not changed, that will be it's a big issue for everyone around the world, you know. It's not only for Afghanistan. Afghanistan is totally gone. It's destroyed. It is everything is gone, collapsed, you know. But we should think about the rest of the world, you know. It's what happened.
Yeah. Mohammed, do you have children?
Oh, yes, I have.
Are they old enough to understand what's going on in their father and their grandfather's
yes.
country?
I have four and a half year son, okay?
Okay.
When I'm talking to my mother and my sister, he's jumping to me and he starts crying, you know. And I just watching the news from Kabul and he said, Daddy, do bring granny to Ireland,
yeah.
You know, and he was. I say, okay, I wish to do, but I can't.
Yeah.
And he asked me, She has a passport. I say yes. Then he say, okay, when she has a passport, she can travel to Ireland. I say, oh, yes. You know, I should say, I say something because he didn't understand, you know. He say, okay, yes, he have a passport. He can she can travel. But, you know, it's hard for me.
He's four and a half. Is he starting school soon, Mohammed?
Oh, yes, he's starting from tomorrow.
Junior class
from tomorrow, you know. He's so excited, but he's always worried about, you know. When I'm sitting on a sofa, okay, I have my mobile phone on my hand, and he came to me and said, Daddy, are you listening, watching the news about Afghanistan?
You know? Yeah, so upsetting.
And last night I was sitting, you know, around middle of night, I think it was around 2 o'clock, and he just wake up. He say, Daddy, you didn't sleep because of your sister, your mother? I say, yes. And he came, jumped to me and say, give me a hug. Hopefully everything will be going in the right path. You know, he's a 4.5 years. He can feel from the side of his dad how I'm concerned about, only not for my family, it's for other families. You know, it's just, you know, you can see that, especially what happens going on in Kabul airport, you know. The people try to escape, but they are killing them. Yesterday, only yesterday, it was 4 people was killed, and 2 of them too young.
I know.
You know.
And Mohammed, is your wife's family from Afghanistan?
Yes, okay. Yes.
And how what do we know about them?
I say, you know, I just mentioned, I'm just concerned about all families, especially. Yes, my brother-in-law, he has an engineer, one of them, he's an engineer. 3 are, he has 5 brothers, all of them educated people. One of them, the oldest one is an engineer, the 2 other pharmacists, and one just finished the university. He just got a visa for education to go to Cyprus.
So they all did well in education in the last 2 decades.
Yes, thank God, yes.
Fantastic,
all of them,
fantastic.
Our young generation is all in our family. The girls, boys are fully educated, fully English. I'm living here last 17 years, but I still have difficulty with English. But my sister, my brother, my, you know, brother-in-law, sister-in-law, they are, all of them have a good education, good English, better than me, you know.
Okay. It's a terrible situation.
Yes.
Terrible situation,
yes.
Mohammed.
Yes.
And you're here, you're safe, but you're out of your mind with worry.
Yes, in my mind, you know, I'm just, today I just out to buy a few things for my kids to start school tomorrow. But, you know, I was in my mind.
Distracted, yeah.
I was in Kabul, you know, I was thinking what happens to my brother, my sister, my mother, my neighbors, my brother-in-law, my sister-in-law, you know. That's a big, big concern, you know.
Yeah, and in humanity, they are our brothers, our sisters, our brothers-in-law, our neighbors as well.
Yes, neighbors. You know, we have a great, lovely neighbor. You know, it's like here, last few days, I have a few neighbors, a lovely neighbor. You know, every morning when I'm just out or back from work, and they just open the window and say, oh, Mohammed, how is your family?
Yeah.
Everything is okay.
Yeah.
The girls can go out. I say, oh, no, God help us. I don't know what, you know. Yeah. It's a 75-year-old lady, and she came to my house, and she cried. And just think how it's people are feeling, you know.
Yeah.
It's an Irish woman, 75 years old, and she came to my house, and she cried about what happens in Afghanistan.
It's affecting so many people.
Yes, it's hard for everyone.
And when
when
you're speaking to your sisters, and you're powerless, you're worried.
Yes.
Is there a prayer you use? Is there any way you can say to
them? I'm a Muslim. Okay, I'm 5 days. Okay.
Yeah.
I always make a prayer. We say dua. We make a dua for everyone, all the time, for all people around the world, especially Afghanistan.
Yeah.
But you know, it's the prayer. The God. The only thing is God help us. You know, the only thing I'm just thinking to, I can do something for someone to at least put and bring him to some. The bad thing is, you know, it's all neighbors. They close the border, you know, to no one can go out, you know, not allowed to skip. Like my sister, I just spoke with him this morning, with her this morning.
Okay.
And she just said, please, brother, if you can do something, at least take us from Kabul to different country. I told her, I'll do my best. I will do my best to do something, but please let me to find a solution, because I'm just totally, you know, at the moment, I cannot do nothing, you know. I'm just like confused, what can I do? It's shocking, you know.
Well, thank you for communicating that to us, Mohammed. We are thinking of your family and your fellow countrymen and women. Praise be Allah, and hopefully the time.
Thank you very much. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Mohammed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a lovely day, okay?
You too. And stay safe.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
The new play that opened in the Abbey is receiving enormous publicity, Walls and Windows by Rosalie McDonough. One of the topics it touches on is arranged marriages within the travelling community. Now, Bridget Wall is on WhatsApp. Bridget, good afternoon.
Hello.
Does it still happen, arranged marriages in the travelling community?
Arranged marriages still happens in the travelling community. It's mostly like older fashioned generation that arranges marriages for their children.
Okay.
And
in your case, Bridget?
In my case, it was my mom's side of the family was very, very stuck in their ways. And
okay.
When my mom passed away, they took over. My mom passed away when I was 12. And on my dad's part of the family, they agree I can marry who I want as long as they be a traveller. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And my mum's family took over, and on the morning of my 16th birthday, I woke up, I was 16, and there was a big wedding dress at the end of my bed.
Oh, God.
And I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know if it was someone else's wedding dress, if someone else getting married.
Mm-hmm.
And then my auntie came in and told me that I'd be getting married. And
when?
I was very scared.
This was your
This was in 2012.
But this is your 16th birthday, Bridget.
My 16th birthday, yeah.
And there's a wedding, the present you get is a wedding dress at the end of your bed.
Yeah.
Had you even got a boyfriend, can I ask, at that stage?
No, I never had no boyfriend at this stage. I never even kissed a boy at this stage.
And your aunt says you're getting married when?
That day, on that same day, 2:00.
What?
Yeah. So, to be honest, but to me it was like, it was very frightening. I was scared, obviously, but it felt like it was normal, do you know what I mean? It felt like it was a normal thing to do.
Bridget, did you know as you went to sleep on your last day being age 15, did you know that tomorrow, as midnight approached and you pass over into the next day, that you were going to be married by that time tomorrow night?
No, I did not know. I didn't know anything. I was terrified. And
there's a wedding ceremony, is there?
There was a wedding ceremony, I got married in Dunstable. It's in Luton in England.
Okay.
And near Luton. And I went there and got married, but I thought if I never, I was like disrespecting my family, do you know what I mean? Bringing shame on my family if I never done what I was told.
And when did you meet, I don't want his name, but when did you meet this man who you were told is going to be your husband?
Yeah, well, I knew of him. I knew him. I seen him at weddings and do's and parties and things. But I never knew I was marrying him, do you know what I mean? Until that day, like, on my wedding. And obviously, when I seen the wedding dress, I was told who I was getting married to.
Yeah. And Bridget, had you ever spoken to him before longer than a minute?
No. Hello, goodbye, how are you? That's it.
And what were the first words you spoke to each other on your wedding day?
He told me congratulations.
And you said?
I had a lump in my heart. I couldn't believe what was going on. I just held my head down and just walked up the aisle and just done my duty.
And who gave you away, so to speak? You know that old phrase? Was your father?
My father never gave me away. My grandfather gave me away. He's dead now, Lord of mercy in his soul.
Yeah. And where was your father at that time?
But my daddy had no say in what was going on.
And you remembered, Bridget, this is relatively recently. You're only in your late 20s.
I'm 26.
Okay, so this is 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you remember the rest of the day, the reception?
I remember the reception. I can remember everyone smiling. Everyone was so happy except for me. It was supposed to be my happiest day of my life. But I wasn't. Everyone else was happy. Do you know what I mean? I was sad. I was crying on the inside, putting on a smile, doing my duties. Terrified. And then just married and then turned into a kitchen to cook and clean.
And Bridget, did all those people at the wedding, okay, you had your wedding dress delivered from wherever on your birthday morning, but did all those people at the wedding, did they know previously that you were going to be forced to get married on that day?
Half of them knew, and some of them never knew.
And Bridget, how did they keep it a secret?
It's not a secret. It's normal in the travelling community.
Yeah, but you know, but you didn't know this.
Oh, kept it a secret from me.
Yes.
Yeah. Because they never. Everyone else found out at the wedding. Do you know what I mean? They knew at the wedding it was arranged, and his family knew. And
but no one said to you before you hit 16, Bridget, you know, when you hit 16, you're going to be married off to somebody.
I didn't want to be married at 16. I was planning on what colour I was getting my nails done. Do you know what I mean? I was picking out colours of what I was going to get my nails done for my birthday.
Normal stuff.
And looking forward to going to the cinema that day to celebrate my birthday.
Do you think arranged marriages still go on within the traveller community?
I think it's horrible. I think it's absolutely disgusting that someone can let their child, a 16-year-old child, what do you know at 16? Do you know what I mean? To get married have them responsibilities on them, to be a wife and to be a mother and to be a housewife and to cook and clean, have all these responsibilities at 16 years old. Do you know what I mean? It affected me an awful lot. I had a lot of breakdowns. Do you know, it affected me mental health. I'm still recovering now.
Yeah, I understand.
From it.
I understand. So, you're extraordinarily strong.
Thank you very much. But I just want to raise awareness for other travelling girls that this is not normal. Forced marriages isn't normal. Getting married at 16 isn't normal. And I think that it should be against the law for someone to get married at 16.
Well, it is down south, isn't it? But up north, you can get married at 16.
Yeah, in the UK, you can get married at 16 with parents' consent. But half of the times, it's not the child's consent, it's the parents' consent. How can the parent have consent over this 16-year-old child? Do you know what I mean?
Incredible. And Bridget, tell me as much as you want. Did you have children?
I have 3 children, God bless them.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I have 2 girls and 1 little boy.
Okay.
And,
And there's no way you tolerate that for your
children? No way. No way in a million years. I want my children to have an education. I want to support their dreams and what they want to do in life. The travelling community are dream crushers, and they don't let their children become what they want to become. When I was growing up, I wanted to work with children. I wanted to work in a nursery.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean? But that was pulled away from me. I was pulled out of school when I was 12. My education was taken away from me. My dreams was crushed, and I don't want that for my children. I want to support my children whatever they want to be in life.
And in terms of, Bridget, I come back to when you were 15 or whatever. Could you have a boyfriend in the travelling community you were in?
No, I wasn't allowed a boyfriend. Never allowed to. You're allowed a boyfriend, yeah, when you're a bit older, like 17, 18. But that's like my dad's side of the family. You're allowed to have a boyfriend, like, but he has to be a traveller. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But my mum's side of the family, they're very strict, and they arrange who the husband's going to be.
And why? Did you? What is their reasoning for that?
It's their tradition. sure, tradition is this, is they do it out of disrespect, they call it. But it's not really respecting their children, really, is
sure,
it?
Sure, I'm going to say respect for who, Bridget?
Yeah, respect for theirself, for their own pride. They're living in the Stone Age.
And is there, I'm sure lots of people agree with you, do they, within the travelling
community? There's lots of people agree with me. I have a lot of supporters that's agreeing with me. A lot of people saying that it doesn't happen. And I'm getting lots of backlash from the travellers, like,
why are they saying?
Saying that I'm exposing them, do you know what I mean? Saying that I'm, why am I telling all the settled community about it, our lives and things like that? I just want to raise awareness for young little girls. Do you know what I mean? I just want to stand up. I want to be a voice for all them young little girls that's getting forced to get married.
Yeah.
I don't care what the consequences is going to be.
Okay. Well, Bridget, thanks so very much.
You're more than welcome.
And you mind yourself and your three beautiful children.
Thank you very much.
That's Bridget Wall. Thanks, Bridget. That's Bridget Wall.
God bless you. Have a good day, everyone.
And you too. God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And Joe@rt.ie. You know Darragh Lynch, he's been on or connected to this programme before. He's a fantastic artist. He did a number of drawings based on Lenny Abrahamson's screen grab of me with my head in my hands, which is a normal, anyone that knows me knows I perpetually go around with my head in my hands. But Lenny took a screen grab on the Normal People Day. Do you remember the Normal People Day? It was only one day. It was only one programme. When people were talking about normal people. This is over, sounds like a decade ago, it was about a year ago. But Lenny took a screen grab and he put it up, and then Dara Lynch took that and he created this incredible. It's an incredible. What do I call your style, Dara?
Well, that would have been a drawing.
A drawing.
That was commissioned by Stephen Fannigan.
Okay,
and Lenny,
a friend of Lenny, and then you sent me a copy and you sent other people. I think Lenny got a copy of it, and it's iconic at this stage, especially in this office that we use it. They took a photocopy of it. They'd never touched the original, and they use it as a dartboard, the team here, when they're upset
great
with me, which is almost every day. But your art is absolutely fantastic. Now,
thanks,
Dara,
thank you very much.
And we want to support all artists, especially at this time. Now, this is a needle in a haystack. You're asked to exhibit in the States, in the United States of America, and you sent your original artwork away. And what happened?
It vanished in transit. The entire package just disappeared, pretty much from the start. So.
And do you know where it disappeared?
The package was picked up, and after much sleuthing, it was deduced. It got as far as Cork Depot, but from there it just, there was no following it. It was never scanned along the way, so at no point was it the tracking code working. So it's just down to human error, I believe. So.
And is there, where do missing parcels go to die or be retrieved? Where do they go?
I would hope that there's the end of the line for this package could have been, if not the gallery, stopped at customs in Europe before going to the States. It would have to hit somewhere, and they'd said this is missing data or documents and needs further paperwork. So that's where I would hope it would be, in a lost and found or neglected package warehouse in customs.
And is there any way you can?
I've exhausted it. I've reached as I worked through a third party company for this, but that wasn't working. So I went myself, and I went to the very top of the courier company.
Well, what do you hope we can do?
Well, ideally, I'd love to find the package, because if I find the paintings, even though I missed the opportunity to exhibit in LA, the gallery in question said they will still exhibit the paintings if I can retrieve them. So, but failing that, I'd just like to shine a light on this issue, how a company can pick up the package and just lose it from the get-go and then just shrug their shoulders and say, sorry, the service you paid for, which is a tracked package, just vanished and it's lost. So.
And not that you would think of this, did you take a photograph of the package?
Ordinarily, I do. I hadn't this time, but I did. I had an image of the package. I did acquire one, and I got that to the depot, and they watched it on CCTV, come into the depot, go to X-ray, go to air freight, and then after that, they couldn't find it in their networks. So,
well, could you? Well, this is what I'm thinking. You see, if you don't have an image of the package, could you recreate the package?
Oh no, I did. I did source an image of the package.
Okay, and did you tweet that and say, anyone working in any of these companies, would you have a look? Is it a distinctive looking package? Maybe it's not.
It is. It's a standard rectangular box, but with fragile tape, the documents on top. The courier company, I did believe, were doing their earnest when I got them the image, because they were sending me screenshots of their CCTV, so I could indeed see it was the same package. But how it just vanished off their system, and they can't say the end of the line for packages that are missing documents go. That's the issue.
Yeah. And because I know people are encouraged to take photographs, for example, of their suitcases. And
yes,
if it goes missing, send us a photograph, and hopefully there'll be something distinctive on the suitcase, a colour, a ribbon, a name, something that makes it...
Well, I've since bought a unicorn duct tape, which goes on all packages since. So that
okay.
Makes stand out.
Now I know it's priceless, but to you, but what value did you put on the package?
Well, sending art, like, I've been a full-time artist 13 years now, and I send work all over the world with couriers. And the practice is generally, as an artist, you live hand-to-mouth. You can't afford to use an art specialist courier who will in turn charge you for insurance and stuff. So you send those the components.
I remember at one stage here, a gallery in Dublin that was 4 miles from the gallery in Kilmainham, the Royal Hospital Kilmainham, the Irish Museum of Modern Art. They had a painting, not by Sean Scully, but by Sean Scully's son, son. And they paid something like 500, well, we paid, sorry, 500 quid to have that painting transported from, I think it was the wonderful Carolyn Gallery there just off Golden Lane up near St. Patrick's, transported 2 miles to the Royal Hospital Kilmainham. But that was by an art company, and they...
Yes, they use crates, and it's the insurance is the big issue. That's why, as an artist, you just simply send it as its components. So I sent it as ACM panels, which are aluminium composite panels, and I've never had an issue before. Most couriers will not ship art for this reason. They don't want to pay out on larger numbers. But you take the chance.
So many pieces of art were in it.
There was 5 paintings. There were 8 by 8.
And are they watercolour oil?
They were oil paintings on art effects panels, on the aluminium panels.
Okay, and what were the images?
They varied. My work is figurative, so there were hands and figures. So that's kind of the basis of my work.
Okay. Now, how have you managed during the lockdown, Dara? What's your routine?
It hadn't really had much bearing, except not being able to see family as much because of lockdowns, because I'm now down in West Cork, although originally from North Dublin myself. My routine stays the same. It's just painting, admin during the day, working on commissions, and then some outdoor stuff, kayaking, snorkeling, and then back into the studio again all night and rinse and repeat.
All night? So,
yeah, I work artist hours, so it's 9 to 5, 9 p.m. to 5 a.m.
But you walk during the day as well?
Yeah, but...
Well, okay, let me ask another. When do you sleep?
If you go to bed at 5 and you get up at 11, that's a good solid 6 hours, and you can get a nap anytime then. So.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry your art is missing for the time being. We've been on to the company...
Yeah,
there's a couple of companies involved, isn't there? Parcel Direct and TNT.
There is. Yeah.
Hopefully, did they say we'd have another go, or
they didn't. The head company TNT, and which is owned by FedEx, they appeared to be pulling out all the stops. They'd called in drivers, checked cameras, and they were really going for it. But ultimately, they just said, "We searched our network. We're closing this. Sorry.
Oh, that's okay.
Too bad. So sad."
That's a pity, isn't it?
It is. It's unfortunate. As I said, I thought there would have been an end of the line where if the package had never been scanned along the way, someone on some line would have said, hang on, this is not scanning, I must contact my line manager. So
I'd love to know, like, you hear different accounts of one, how, and I think I've heard this company mentioned the same, but how fantastically organised it all is, and barcodes and thousands of conveyor belts and thousands of loading bays and working like clockwork. By the way, you mentioned insurance. How much would it have cost to get the paintings insured?
I'm not sure on the full figure, but it does go into the hundreds to insure it. Plus, also, companies will only insure products. Well, for starters, they won't ship art, but say you send a laptop, they'll only insure up to a certain limit, so maybe 2,000, and you'll still have to pay huge.
But if you would pay the full whack on the insurance, Dara, what would you have got back, so to speak, if they've gone missing as they have?
I'm not fully sure, but I know it had to have gone through an official art courier. But the other side of that as well is your artwork, even though it's going to exhibit, when you get to return it from the US, if you have the official value of the, you know, the large number, you get charged customs on your own products coming back in. So hang on a minute.
Art you create?
Yes.
Which you haven't made any money from?
Yeah, it's mine. Okay. I'm simply sending it to exhibit.
So if you value it, say, at 10 grand?
Yeah.
You send it to the States and insured for 10 grand?
Yeah.
Okay. And it doesn't sell in this gallery? It's then posted back to you and you're charged VAT on 10 grand?
Yes.
Ah, for God's sake.
So, hence, you send it as its components and roll the dice.
But surely, are you charged VAT here to the Irish state?
I believe so. I know once before someone tried doing that. I tried getting charged, but the courier company sorted it for me, said, no, this was his own products being sent for this, for only... Yeah. You know, whatever they use techniques, but generally that's the practice. So artists are dissuaded from sending them as such as art.
Okay,
if you're sending a birthday card, you don't send it in a flowery card because someone may think there might be money in this. You send it as a blank envelope. The same with the art; you simply send it as an anonymous box with products inside.
Good stuff. But I know on posts they're extraordinarily serious when it comes to the post. If anyone tries to interfere with
I would have used on post, I was down to, I needed a 2 to 3 day express.
Okay.
Otherwise, I'd normally use on post registered. They've never let me down. So it's my own fault.
That's not your own fault, not at all. Were you painting today?
Yes, I'm working on a sunset commission. So
okay, good stuff. And you're available for commissions at daralynch.com.
So D-A-I-R-E.
D-A-I-R-E. Okay, Dara, he's a fantastic artist and he does beautiful, beautiful commissions. He did a beautiful one of Angus McAnally. You did a beautiful one of Billy.
Yes.
Billy Martin. And you did it. I've seen other ones you do there. They are a beautiful birthday gift.
I'm prolific.
And what do I need to send you? Photographs, is it?
Good. Yes, for a selection. I work off photographs. Well,
I saw the one of Angus. It's uncanny how you captured his visceral beauty in his every wrinkle on his visage.
Thank you. His joy of his music. So.
His joy. And it was a beautiful one of Angus in his Christy Hennessy mode. You captured him to a T. Okay, Dara, good to meet you, Margaret. Dara, we if you want to send us a photograph, we'll tweet the photograph in the long distant hope. But anyway,
thank you.
Okay,
very
much, Joe. Dara, stay safe. We love artists as a country. We love artists. Thank you, Dara.
Thank you,
Lynch. Thank you. 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
We've been talking about, again, totally accidentally, came up on the programme Tuesday, September 16th, 1941, 80 years ago in a few weeks. A premature explosion of an anti-tank mine in the Glen of Amal killed 16 Irish soldiers. The biggest casualty in any single incident, so to speak, since the Civil War. Now, Anthony O'Brien has contacted us. Anthony, you were in the Irish Army 26 years until 2003. You were in the Glen of Amal in 1978. What happened?
We were on what's called an engineer conversion, course, John. So I joined in 76, and you're trained as a fully trained infantry soldier, and then because I had a trade, I was sent to the Corps of Engineers in Clancy Barracks, which is long since gone now. But you then have to train to be an engineer, which we do bridge building, we do explosives, booby traps, all that type of thing. And so that was in 78 then. I was sent to the Corps to do the engineer conversion course with a number of people. We were in the Glen, and one of the things was we were doing what you'd call a heavy demolition, where we were, the whole class was about 10 or 12, but I can't remember the grand total. There was a few from Dublin, a few from Athlone, a few from Cork and all that, you know. And we were doing what was called the heavy demolition, where you pile drive a number of holes into the centre of the ground. If you just imagine, say a 6-inch pipe, where you drill out your pile drive down, we say you go down 4 or 5 feet, another one, say 2 metres apart, another one, and yeah, they were in the line. I think there was 5 or 6 of them, and they're all linked to the explosives, would be in plastic explosives and that, and they're all linked to a detonating cord, and we all synchronised to blow together. So we're all up the top of the hill, and the explosion happens, and boom, 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 boom. You see the puffs coming up out of the various holes. Brian noticed one didn't explode, you see. So the sergeant in charge then said, right, we'll go down and have a look. And I ran over to him saying, oh, one of them didn't blow. And he said to me, they all blew. And I said, he didn't. And he said to me, in fact, look, you don't be telling me what to do. And the sergeant in charge, and I said, I'm telling you, one of them didn't blow. I seen it. Okay. And he turned to the officer in charge. And the officer kind of made us go over and check. So we're halfway down the hill. He went down ahead over to the hole, and next of all, he turns around shouting in a rage, like, get back, get back, get back. We had to go back up the hill. One of the holes hadn't blown, you see. Okay. Now, that could be a result of the detonator could have been loose, the detonator so could have been faulty, but it could go off when we're all down looking at it, you know, which was extremely dangerous. So we were all just put back in the trucks and brought back to the Curragh.
Okay.
The sergeant on the day then, he had to stay behind. Land Rover stayed with him. He had to make that hole safe, whichever way he'd done it, I don't know, you know. But to this day, I always thought about it, going, geez, we could have all been killed, you know.
Okay. And was your alertness and sharpness acknowledged by the army?
No, nothing at all. And at the time, I wasn't looking for it anyway.
I know that.
You know, we went back then. I'm from Ballyfermot, but like yourself, Joe. Mm-hmm. And I would commute up and down most days, you see, because the corridor was kind of miles away because the bypasses went there then, like the Nice Road and all that, you know. You bypass Newbridge and Nice. So,
Did your other comrades in the army, did they realise what the alertness had saved them?
Ah, yeah. They were going back in the trucks, they were laughing, they were saying, Jesus, like, I was called OB, you know, I was only private then. Fair play, Joe B, God, OB, God, you know, laughing and joking, do you see? But it was never mentioned again from the point of view of acknowledged. And when I would go down the corridor, because in 1980 I was a sergeant in the Director of Engineers office, but I belonged on paper to the School of Engineers in the corridor in McDermott, and I'd be down there and I'd see this man, and he'd be there and he'd always give me a big loud welcome, you know, and I used to say, well, that's acknowledging what I'd done on the day, because I do believe, like, it was the type of thing, I suppose you'd call it a cover up then, because you wouldn't want to affect people's careers, because if I hadn't stood any ground and insisted, and there was sergeants pulling rank on me, telling me he's a sergeant. Yeah, they only said, I'm telling you, one didn't.
Didn't explode.
Now,
Anthony, Glenavamal is, as someone mentioned here yesterday, and people have forgotten about this, obviously not their families and friends, but 3 young boys were killed in the Glenavamal at Easter time. In 1979, April 14th, 1979, it was mentioned yesterday, when one of them picked up a device. They were on a scouting trip from Lucan.
I just wanted
to mention their names because it's important that they be remembered. The boys that were killed on April the 14th in Glenavamal, 1979, were 13-year-old Declan Kane, Derek Finn, 13, Victor Mills, 12. They were all from St Mary's U Club, a trekking party from St Mary's U Club in Lucan. There was 32 in the group, 6 youth leaders, which is a high ratio. And they were on a hike, and one of the lads picked up a device, and apparently, according to the Minister of Defence, in the Shannon at the time, one of the boys, as boys do, threw the projectile against a rock and caused an explosion, and the 3 boys were killed. And it was the biggest single explosion, casualty explosion since 1941, the one we've been talking about. But I noticed this year in the Tala Echo, They're saying there's a little memorial. I'm surprised the names of the children aren't on the memorial up in Sarsfield Park in Lucan. But the issues, the headline in the Talawaco, the echo.ie is, this is on the anniversary there back in April, the Sea Spies families were very much forgotten by the state.
Yeah.
And one of them said, we were the army's dirty little secret in terms of, I don't know what the inquiry discovered in terms of like warning signs. I know one local priest said at the funeral there was not enough. It's not enough to put up warning notices. The Glen of Amal continued to be used as an army missile range as well as a place of recreation. So, I, as I say, local residents are saying we've been forgotten now. I don't know if that's the view of the families, but it's important to remember those three young boys, young boys, they'd out on a hike with leaders. So that was then, and the in the Glen of Amal, you worked there. Are there lots, both for soldiers and because it's an open area, are there lots of warning signs?
Well, I have to be honest with you. At the time, I would not have remembered warning signs. I'd emphasise that with you. Secondly, I would say one thing, and I would be aware of this, that because I married into a family of Republicans at the time, and there would have been, it wouldn't necessarily been that, a piece of explosive was left behind by the army. It could have been left by the IRA as well. I want to emphasise that as well, you know. And the second thing is, if to pick up something and throw it against the rock, well, then well, I'm thinking about explosives and about a detonator.
Their children, children.
Yeah. No, they wouldn't know that it was explosive, but it's the impact. It's the impact. So the detonator that's in it might be subject to an impact, like a landmine would be subject to an impact. If it was a grenade he picked up and threw it and the pin fell out, it would explode, you know what I mean? You know?
Yeah. And apparently there was 9 or 10 of the boys from Lucan were seriously injured.
Yeah, well, I was explaining to your researcher, when you get an explosion, now I know this because I'm a forward officer of the health service and I studied in Edinburgh for fire safety, and a pressure head, Joe, you get a 100-pound bomb and plant it in the desert and it goes off, boom, the pressure just dissipates, right? But you take that 100-pound bomb and you plant it in O'Connell Street, the pressure hits the buildings each side and the first to go is the windows. Yeah. And the turbulence created when the pressure goes through the window is makes the pressure head stronger on the inside. So when you get an explosion in amongst people, the people that are near obviously will be torn apart, but the human cell in the front causes turbulence, which makes the pressure even stronger. So it takes out the people even further away, Joe. That's a phenomenon with the pressure head, the turbulence that's created, you know. It's an unusual thing.
Okay, well, thank you for your service, Anthony. Thank you for your bravery in spotting that and doing it on the day. I don't know what the procedure in the army is for awarding. I know there's a lot of brilliant awards in the Gardaí Scott Medal.
I've seen it today.
We'll finish by remembering those three little boys. We'll be Declan Kane,
yes, indeed.
Derek Finn, and Victor Mills. Yeah. They're buried, know the cemetery as I do, Anthony. They're buried up in Esker Cemetery. In Lucan, and apparently they're buried side by side. So if you're in Esker Cemetery, say a little prayer for those between.
I will do, Joe.
Between the two boys, they didn't manage 40 years between the three of them.
That's
13 as well.
Yeah.
Rest in peace. Okay, thanks indeed, Anthony. Today's producer was Annette Egan, and Rebecca Meehan is the series producer. And Ray Darcy is next.